Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, March 24th, 2016. And you know, the name of my show is the James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads. And I say that at the end of every show. This time I'm going to say it at the beginning. Good grief. Let me just put it this way. This world is becoming an extremely dangerous place to be. And this is being created. This is a created mess, but the end result for you out there, now they're talking about what they call soft targets. Isn't that a precious word? A soft target. This summer, by the reckoning of many people that I know also, without mentioning names, many people think this summer is just the place is going to come unglued. And a lot of people are trying to maintain, you know, when you have a country, there's certain things that you maintain there. You know, all countries do it. The Islamic countries do it. They're very, very set on culture and history and standards, according to their standards. But it seems that nobody will allow the United States to have culture and history and values, you know, that are specific to it. It's like we're supposed to just throw the door open and, you know, all, you know, just, to, you know, and it's a mixing pot. Yes, that's understandable. But there are values there, and there are values that the people hold that live there, and they have a right to maintain those. And that's being threatened because they don't like the United States, the people in leadership, because it's always been known. It's been in the CIA charter. It's been at the very heart of destruction of the United States that the New World Order cannot come in until the United States falls. And anyway, I'm not going to talk any more about that other than just put on your hip boots and be ready to protect yourself because and take care of yourselves because this summer things are going to get ugly. That's about the best term I can use. And by the way, regarding political commentary, things like that, I will keep that to an absolute minimum. Other than like just now talking about basically warning you, other than that, there's so much political commentary out there today that I don't need to waste my time on this show giving more unless it actually warrants it for some reason, mainly when other people are not covering a topic. By the way, my main science topics tonight, I'll be talking about the green comets that came by last Monday, a very interesting result of, and I made some predictions which came true regarding that. And then also the NASA admitting that the electrical current streams that I have predicted connecting Earth to the Sun have been discovered and now disclosed. So very important. One of my other scientific predictions very much confirmed. So those will be my two main science topics tonight. But first of all, talking about St. Louis, Missouri, this last week, a haze, a mysterious haze layer, blanketed St. Louis, Missouri, and doggone, nobody could figure out where it's coming from. It reminds me of the water pollution up in, which city was it in Oregon? One of the big cities, and they keep having E. coli in their water system. And so they can't figure out doggone where that's coming from, but it's in the reservoirs, up in, what city was that? Anyway, St. Louis, Missouri has this haze layer. Nobody can figure out where it's coming from, but, in digging around a little bit, there's an article that actually came out. Let me see when this was actually printed. This was from 2012, October of 2012, an Associated Press article says that Army and Defense, the Army sprayed St. Louis with toxic aerosols during a test just revealed in the 1950s, where they had blowers on buildings, and they actually put this into a low housing, a low income housing district in St. Louis. And then these people were saying that their babies died, their fathers died, their siblings died, a lot of them of rapid cancer. And then it comes out that the Army used, it says here, used motorized blowers atop a low-income housing high-rise at schools and from the backs of station wagons to send a potentially dangerous compound into the already hazy air in predominantly black areas of St. Louis. So since nobody seems to be able to figure out where the haze is coming from, it would seem to imply that there is some nefarious source of this, and just simply not something you can, you know, go down. It's not like tires burning or something else, you know, that you could locate the source and say, okay, here's where it's coming from. Okay, well, now you at least know where it's coming from. Possibly can't do anything, but who knows what is in this haze. Of course, there's no government measurements or government follow-up from any of this. So as far as I can tell, as far as I can search up to the time of this show, there has been no solution to that. But interesting, I don't have an answer. I don't know what to tell you. So St. Louis residents, you know, maybe get an oxygen mask. Now, here's an interesting story. A number of people sent this in. Biscayne Bay down in Florida, kind of a higher-end area, at least historically higher-end area of South Florida. The Florida Power and Light Company, the Turkey Point facility, nuclear power plant, for a long time has been dumping high-level tritium radioactive waste into, and it's leaking into Biscayne Bay. And the levels are, they say in the articles, 215 times normal. So this is, if you want tritium in your water. And of course, a lot of these places in Florida are using seawater as their water source. They do reverse osmosis. They put that together with some groundwater, which sometimes gets pumped in from other areas, from outside, from farther away, like sometimes pumped quite a ways. And then they put chloramines in it. Chloramine is a, they put it in to kind of drown out the taste of the, and chloramines has a pretty ugly taste all of its own, but it's a severe chemical. And so anyway, just to let you know, my water filters are one of the, basically the only one that I know of that takes out chloramines and is certified to do so. It's certainly the only one that's certified to take out chloramines. In fact, those silly little carbon things you buy at the big box store don't take out anything. In fact, they even advertise that they don't take out fluoride or other things, that, as if it was good for you. But yeah, Biscayne Bay. I guess there are going to be some people glowing in the dark down there if they keep drinking the water there. But unfortunately, there's no real filtration that takes out radiation. There are people who claim they do, but I'm sorry, but that's a big order. And especially if it's in a high-pressure system, like in your house pressure system, the eventually that radioactive stuff will get pushed through, because here's what happens. The radioactive material likes to grab onto dust particles and things, just like particles of something. They like to attach to it. And so the way you filter nuclear waste, that's why I have my pre-filter. It's the chemical radiation oil pre-filter. And what happens is in a slower filtration process, like with gravity feed, the the radiation is tacked onto dust, and what you're really doing is taking that dust out of the water, therefore the radiation, and then you throw that away every now and then. The problem with a high pressure, like under a sink or like in an inline system, is that the radiation is attached to the dust particle. Well, yeah, you can filter that out initially, but eventually in the high pressure system, the tritium or whatever it is, the strontium or whatever it is, the nuclear particle, is going to break off of that dust particle and flow into your system, also contaminating your filter, and eventually it's going to get into your water anyway. So literally you cannot, it's you know, anybody who says they filter out radiation in a high pressure system, it's different in the real world. And this is something too that you have to understand a lot about water filtration, that if you take a laboratory situation, in fact this is something, my GF filters have been tested for virus, and in the laboratory setting there's the P231 national NSF certification test that my water filters have been tested for, but that's a laboratory setting. And so basically virus in the real world, if you have severe levels of virus, I don't claim on the specification sheet to take out viruses, and there's a reason for that. Because viruses are extremely small, so they're not filtered as per se, but they are taken out in the filters. But because the laboratory situation could be different than the real world situation when it comes to viruses, I'm not talking about other contaminants like chemicals, because my filters, because of the way they're built, they do target those chemicals, etc., and remove all of the those chemicals up to the limit specified in the filter specification sheet. But anyway, back to the topic of tritium. That's why if people are really worried about radiation in your water, let me tell you something else. Part of filtration is not just taking things out. It's what will go into the water from your filter system, because the filter system potentially could contribute contaminants to your water system. And I've seen all kinds of things proposed, like putting little droplets in water and coagulating pollutants and getting them out. That's swell, but then what else is going into your water? Those, you know, they never talk about that. There again, with my filters, they're designed so that when they remove things, they don't contribute anything back into the water system. There's an internal ceramic seal there that prevents anything coming into the water from the filter itself. So there's a lot in the design here. I got a kick out of this. I was in a third world country once, and I was putting some my filters in for some people. We bought some plastic containers and for these poor people, and one guy goes, I could make those in my, you know, back in the shed back there. And I'm like, no, buddy, you can't just make these in your shed. This is not, you know, a ceramic doll or something. So it's not like, yeah, you can just throw one of these together in an afternoon. You know, there's strict manufacturing standards. The materials you use have to be food grade or medical grade. That's the grade of materials that go into these filters or in my pre-filter. So anyway, the reason I'm mentioning this issue in Biscayne Bay is to try and enlighten people about the filtration of radiation and what it takes. The 1950s civil defense method for getting radiation, this is back in the Cold War days, they said take a bucket, put an old t-shirt in there or a t-shirt, and punch some holes in the bottom of the bucket, put your t-shirt in the bucket, put dirt in the bucket. The only thing they didn't really think about is that, gee, that dirt is probably full of radioactive waste too. You know, unless you got a clean pile of dirt sitting in your house someplace. But anyway, the idea was that you pour your water through this bucket with dirt in it, and that would take out the radiation. That's a good plan. However, the dirt in the bucket is going to, you know, your water is going to come out looking like coffee, because all the water is going to dissolve a lot of that material. Even though you got a t-shirt down there, a lot of that's going to come through, and your water is going to look like coffee because all the dirt is being mixed into your water. So there's a great case where you're taking something out, but you're contributing a lot of other stuff into the water before it comes out the bottom of your bucket. So there's a number of considerations, but I guess the civil defense thought you'd be better off drinking some dirt than radiation. Anyway, that's just a few notes on that. But yeah, that's the next wave of EPA failure to perform, is you're going to be finding out all over the country these nuclear power plants. In fact, there have been studies done, estimates that over 100 nuclear power plants are leaking, polluting the groundwater in their areas. I don't know if you can hear some noise in the background. If you do, please ignore that. I'm trying to. There's just a little bit of work that's kind of beyond my control here. Amazon, I do not sell on Amazon. My products, what we found is they're knockoffs. People are trying to sell my books, etc., on Amazon as new. No, boys and girls, I do not sell anything on Amazon. Nobody is authorized to sell my books on Amazon. If you're looking at used books there, mine are a lot cheaper, a lot less expensive on my own page. So anyway, I've tried to get Amazon to respond, and they're just a royal pain. They demand, like, to know. It's just ridiculous. Amazon has had many articles recently written. There are estimates that, in some cases, people estimate that the majority of things being sold on Amazon are knockoffs. You know, who knows what's in these, but anyway, do not buy my books or anything related to me on Amazon. I don't have anything there. Nobody's authorized to sell my stuff. And by the way, don't buy the Colburn on Amazon. If you bought a Colburn on Amazon, send it back. It's a piece of junk. It's not the Colburn. It's a completely distorted who knows what, but it's not the Colburn. Get the Colburn from the source in Australia and in New Zealand. Link on my webpage for that. Once again, I do not sell anything on Amazon. Don't go there for my products. So let's see here. Okay, so I'm going to go right to the main science topics here. First of all, just a note on the terrorist attack in Brussels. You know, within a day they're coming out, Obama is Johnny on the spot, you know, we got to fight terrorism. All of the airports now heightened security. They saw the same crisis actor in Sandy Hook, in the Boston Marathon bombing, and now in Brussels. They have identified the same guy, who supposedly one of the American guys that got hurt, has been in all three of these. So you know where this is coming from. A lot of the political protester stuff that's going on in the U.S. is funded by Clinton and Soros to try and disrupt the election process in the United States. And it's very bizarre that the Republicans, who should be real happy that they got somebody that's actually winning, said they would rather have Hillary Clinton win, that they would form their own party or candidate or whatever, split the Republican Party and lose to dump Trump, then force Hillary Clinton to take the win, then for Trump to win. That's so bizarre. But See, all of them are on a big gravy train in Washington. It's just a free money ride once they get to Washington. And then that flows down the chain through the Republican Party, you know, to the state parties and all of that. So it's just a big money flow. It's like a cascade of money. I've always said the only difference between the Republican and the Democrat Party is who gets the majority of money. It's like in funding for, say, aerospace. If Boeing gets the contract, well, Lockheed Martin knows it's going to get a big piece of that action, too. It's just that who in the executive branch gets the bigger bonuses because they signed the main contract with the government or the Department of Defense or whoever it is. But they're all going to get a piece of the pie. It's just who gets the bigger piece. So, anyway, life as usual. Let me first talk about the NASA admitting electric current streams connecting Earth to the sun. They called them magnetic ropes. Now, let me see. I have a lot of degrees, let's put it that way, in physics and in electricity, electromagnetism. I've taught it at the university level. I mean, I think I know a little bit. I worked in industry for 25 years in the electronics industry. And I think I know a little bit about, you know, terminology and how things work. Magnetic ropes, there ain't no such thing, boys and girls. There's no such thing as a magnetic rope. What these are current sheets. Well, current sheets don't just flow around because they like to. They flow around because there are potential differences. There's actual causes for this, just like lightning in the atmosphere. There is lightning in the atmosphere because the Earth's atmosphere is part. It's a portion of a much larger electric field and electrical circuit. So when the weatherman or NASA or the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration or the Hurricane Prediction Center, whoever in national officialdom tries to tell you that lightning develops in a cloud and then comes shooting out the top and bottom, it's not how it works, boys and girls. Literally, a cloud, by definition, in electromagnetism, a cloud is a conductor. And a conductor, when put in an electric field, has an electric field of zero to the inside. And when they send airplanes up into the clouds to try and measure electric fields, gee, boys and girls, they get electric fields that are almost zero. And, of course, there's always transient currents and things like that going on in a cloud or any type of conductor. And so if you could get into, say, a big steel ball, which is a conductor, and you put that big steel ball into an electric field, the electrons are going to go up to the positive side of the field, the external field, and the that leaves the positive charges, which are typically locked into the structure, into the lattice, etc. And so they are, in fact, that leaves that side of the ball positive, but the end effect is that to the inside of the ball, the electric field is zero. And you can check any college student that's taken electromagnetism. That's one of the basic problems that you solve, and you understand why this happens. Because the field wants to be zero. Charge is going to move to cancel the field, and that's the very principle of my plasma discharge comet model. The sun, through fusion, or this galactic nucleus, whatever, creates an electric field that's part of the process, and you have an excess current of protons in the solar wind. That's the overall electric field that drives the entire solar system. So when we see lightning in the clouds, that cloud is simply a component in an overall larger electric field and electric current. When we see ropes of current connecting Earth to the sun, these are part of a much larger electrical circuit. And Earth is trying to discharge that capacitor, and that capacitor is much bigger than Earth can discharge. in an afternoon or in a month or in 100 or a million years. That capacitor continues to build up. And if the sun went off at a certain point, that capacitor would quickly be discharged and it wouldn't be there anymore. So there's a lot of complexities to this whole thing. But oddly enough, NASA has finally measured these, very much confirmed exactly what I've been saying, and you can see it in my work, you can see it in my drawings, in my work, etc., going all the way back into the 1970s when I developed this. And by the time I got to Cornell in 1979 to 81, my theoretical work had been developed. So when I started seeing this in the data coming back from NASA space probes, I said, there it is. And these guys, I mean, they had no clue at all, zero clue of what was going on. The NASA guys at Cornell, and there were a lot of them there. You know, as scientists there, they didn't teach. None of these guys taught. They were just like royalty. They just walked around and puffed their chest out and thought they were smart. But literally, they then tried to cover up data, change data, do whatever it took, because all they could talk about was gravity. They couldn't talk about electricity because it was politically incorrect. But I wasn't linked to any of that baloney, so I was free to develop all my theoretical work, which has very clearly been proven over and over again, and here's another exact example of that. There's, like I say, there's no such thing. What's a magnetic rope? There's no such thing. The magnetism around these literally current sheets is because electrical currents cause magnetic fields. That's where magnetic fields come from. Magnetic fields do not just exist on their own. They're not just happy little magnetic fields out there. And, I think I'll go over here and be a magnetic field today. That's the NASA view of the world. Wow, are these guys, they're tripping on something there. But it's not science. Electric currents cause magnetic fields. Without that, magnetic fields do not exist. Let's take a bar magnet, for example. You know, you get a bar magnet, and you know, you hold it in your hand, and you can pick up nails, steel nails on the table with that, or, you know, other things. And how does that magnet, where does the magnetism come from? Where does this magical magnetic field come from? Well, locked into that piece of metal magnet, it's typically iron. There's other more exotic forms of magnets now, niobium and things like that, that are used in rare earth metals that are used in magnets for, like, you know, high-end. They produce a better, stable, long-term magnetic field. But here's what happens. Earth has a magnetic field internal to it. And I'll be talking about that when I talk about these twin comets that passed Monday and also taking a compass. But the magnetic field in that piece of metal, here's how you form it. You take your molten iron with some nickel mixed in, if you like, because those are the two highest and least expensive, most common magnetic materials known to man found on this planet. You take that in a molten state and you pour it into a little form, the shape that you want your magnet to be in. Some of them are a horseshoe shape, some of them are linear, some of them are like a long pad or like a long bar, etc., whatever. Anyway, you pour your molten iron in there. Now, as that cools down, you create a magnetic field around there by some other source. And typically that's done by running electric currents through a wire, and you try and get that field as strong as you can. Because here's what happens. As the in the molten state, the little atoms in there of iron, they have an internal, the atoms of iron have an internal magnetic field. and it's directed. It has a north and a south, each little atom. And in the heated state, those atoms are moving around and bouncing around and in all different directions. But if you put them in a magnetic field, they tend to align with that external magnetic field. And as it cools down and those iron molecules or nickel solidify into that bar, then they hold that direction and they're all adding together into a magnetic field. If you do not have an external magnetic field, iron will still maintain a little bit of a magnetic field because those atoms are going to try and align before they cool, but it's going to be very poor alignment relative to the case where you have an external sustained external magnetic field. So when you have Earth's surface, it has magnetic field locked into it. That's because when the Earth's, the iron and the nickel in the Earth's surface, when that was solidifying in back in the early days of the Earth, Earth had a plasma magnetic field external. This was the Sun creating electrical currents and therefore magnetic fields. And that locks the iron and nickel into a certain direction, and that gives them basically a northern direction. So we know that when the Earth was formed, that the Earth had a plasma magnetic field with direction that we call north now. That's the northern direction. And by the way, the magnetic field is not true north. True north is what we call the spin axis of the Earth. So don't confuse the two. We have literally two north poles. And there's a lot of talk and chatter that, oh, the North Pole is racing up. It's past the real North Pole and it's going into Russia, or there's going to be a pole flip or something like that. Complete hogwash. The Earth's magnetic field is moving slowly in a direction towards the geomagnetic field, the rotational North Pole. The geomagnetic field is slowly migrating to there. And that's because within the last 10,000 years, Earth had a big jolt. And the old magnetic North Pole corresponded with the old North, the old spin axis North Pole of Earth. And they got displaced by quite a bit. And so now the magnetic pole is migrating back to north, to true north, what we call true north today. So it's a rather complicated issue. But all of this is related to external magnetic fields. And external magnetic fields, like I say, they're not just these happy little magnetic fields that, oh, I think I'll be a magnetic rope over here today. No. They depend on electric currents. You don't have sustained electric currents without electric fields, and you don't have sustained electric fields without some kind of process that maintains them on a long-term basis. This is basic physics, electromagnetic physics 101. And it's something that standard science, you know, the big trouble with meteorologists and other people like this, geologists, space scientists, astronomers, etc., is they stop taking physics at a very early level in college. They probably didn't get to E&M, or if they did, they probably got a C in it and are very embarrassed. That'd be an interesting thing to see, to go around all these big honcho space scientists and astronomers and to see their electromagnetism, you know, grades from college. I bet there's a lot of C's and possibly F's in there. So that's when they decided to become an astronomer. And then they get out and they puff their chest out and talk about magnetic ropes. Anyway, like I say, ain't no such thing as a magnetic rope. On to the next topic, which is very much related, very much real. And here's the deal. Last week, I finished my show. Minutes after that, NASA makes an announcement that Monday, this past Monday, so the, in looking from perspective of last week's show, the coming Monday, there would be two comets coming very close to Earth, just a couple million miles away. In fact, that's very close for an actual live comet. So it was the closest comet in hundreds of years, and about the second or third on record. There was one, and I think Lexel's comet came much closer. I think it still holds the record for the closest comet passage. The Tunguska event in Russia, days before the explosion, which when I worked with Russian scientists back in the mid-90s, they were very emphatic that that was an electromagnetic pulse, and like a lightning basically from outer space, and they didn't know why, how, or where did it come from? Where does this bolt of electricity come from in outer space? Well, and that's why they were very enthralled with my work. We spent a lot of time translating it and getting that up there. And it was taught in Russia, literally at the university level and graduate level by these Russian scientists. My work was literally taught there, you know, back in the day there, after the mid-1990s when they got a hold of my work, because they were trying to understand things like tornadoes on the sun, something that NASA didn't discover till a few years ago. The Russian scientists were fully aware of the cause because of my work back in the mid-90s. They had already viewed the tornadoes on the sun. But they were trying to understand this atmospheric lightning activity. But they knew the data, basically the reports that had come from the Tunguska-Siberia area, that days before the encounter, before the explosions, the air glow increased dramatically. Now, remember that word, the air glow, because that's going to come out in these two comets that pass by Earth Monday. The Tunguska event was preceded by days of very high levels of air glow. That's electrical, basically lighting up of Earth's upper atmosphere. And this is something that literally is going on all the time. But when you have these special electrical events, then the air glow becomes very intense. In fact, sometimes you can actually see it in the broad daylight. I have a picture at the top of my homepage of a picture that was taken this past Monday down in Atacama, Chile. And it shows the air glow bright green and equal to the setting sun, actually brighter than the setting sun in brightness. That's how bright it was. And at night it was so bright that you couldn't even see the stars. So anyway, this is a picture that's posted at the very top of my homepage. You can see it there. And by the way, there's a little, always on the right side, there's a box you can click on, and gives you a full screen picture of that photo. But anyway, back to the announcement. NASA waited specifically till my show was over to make this announcement, something they've known about for a very long time, for years. In fact, the second little comet was discovered many months ago, but they waited till Thursday night after my show, minutes after my show, to make the public announcement. And of course, the information started flooding in, the emails, hey, did you see this? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so anyway, then I made a posting on my webpage, and I made some predictions. So let me quick go through that for those who did not have the benefit of reading my homepage. But I made a bunch of predictions about what would happen Monday when these two little comets came by. And they were little. There was no prediction of any kind of collision. They were certainly well known. They had plenty of data, so they knew these things were not going to collide with Earth. But let me quick go back to Mars last October. The comet sighting spring, it came by the planet Mars, and I made some predictions there. In fact, was observing Mars myself when Sighting Spring, a small comet also, came by Mars. Now note that Sighting Spring was 87,000 miles away from, 87 million miles away from Mars. So this was you know, in terms of lunar distances, multiply that by four. So we're talking about, you know, 360 lunar distances. A million miles is four lunar distances. Because the moon is 250,000 miles away, basically, you know, more or less. And so a million, this is an easy thing to remember, a million miles is four lunar distances. And so these comets were going to be like 12 and 14 lunar distances away from Earth, which is pretty close. But compare that to sighting Spring and Mars, it was like 360 lunar distances. So in terms of astronomical distances, much farther away from Mars. Yet, just recently, NASA made a big announcement. Finally, you know, after months and months, they finally released the data that sighting Spring caused tremendous changes to the Martian magnetic field and atmosphere. And I literally saw Mars light up like a comet. Mars became a comet for a brief period of time, and we were able to observe this from Earth. I observed it myself, and many other people observed it also. And we have photos and the whole thing where Mars literally turned into a comet. And you could see it. It had a coma surrounding it. So, and this was from 87 million miles away. These comets coming by Earth were a couple million miles away, very, very close compared to sighting Spring going by Mars back in October. So it was not really a big prediction on my part to call some of the effects that were going to happen. And so anyway, let me go through those, and then I'll enumerate why these are important. Not the least of which is the tremendous air glow that happened in the southern hemisphere, not to mention weather, things like that. So I'm going to read my prediction literally, so and then talk about it. Okay, so reading from my webpage prediction, it said, super important comet announcement. And of course, I made this like Thursday evening after my show was done last week. And it says, super important comet announcement. Not one, but two comets are set to pass Earth this coming Monday. First note, these are not on collision courses with Earth, according to authorities, and I have no reason to doubt this. They will pass just 3 million miles away from Earth, but other effects will certainly occur, and you should be set to observe and be part of the worldwide watch team. Continue reading to see what you should do. But the clowns at NASA waited until minutes after my live radio show to announce this, even though they had known about this for months, actually for years. It says... But let's put this into perspective. Last October, and then I go on to talk about sighting Spring, so I'm not going to repeat that here, that it attached electrically to Mars as the comet's surrounding electric sheath, which extends from the comet nucleus as explained in my plasma discharge comet model. So the plasma sheath of the comet can be very large. In the case of sighting Spring, possibly as much as 100 million miles large. It's a big hydrogen ion cloud, circular or spherical cloud that surrounds the comet. It's the shielding, literally the shielding of the electric field of the comet. Okay, now I go on and I say the two comets coming near Earth Monday are all so small, but they are coming extremely close. They will pass only 3 million miles, just 12 lunar distances, and visible only in the southern hemisphere, where I will have many people with equipment for direct observations. One of these comets was classified as an asteroid until it grew a tail, also as explained in my comet model, that asteroids and comets are literally the same, because it's not the material, it's the literally the discharge of the solar capacitor. So I'm not going to give more details. Of course, you can read about that in my books. Here's what you can do to be part of the Worldwide Comet Watch Team. Start today. You will take measurements now and then compare to measurements when the comets are passing as they start to connect to the Earth electrically, starting as early as Sunday. This is this past Sunday. Get a compass like the one the Boy Scout uses. Look at it frequently now and before the comet arrives. Watch for how stable it is. Put it on a table far away from anything metal, outside is best, and leave it there. When the comet comes, you could very likely see the compass needle going wild. Get your phone GPS set up. Observe your position now and before the comet arrives. The electromagnetic effects could affect your GPS location, so during the comet passage, this could be changing rapidly, although you are not moving. Pull down weather reports in the 10-day forecasts all over the world. Also, pull down any related information like solar output or aurora borealis predictions. Pull down all related weather space weather reports for the next day's predictions. Then watch the Earth weather possibly react to the passing comets. Watch as possible unprecedented auroras happen around the world in places where they normally do not occur. Compare your captured weather predictions from the internet with the realities. Okay, now here's, listen to this. Watch for noctoluminescent clouds and lightning at night, even though there are no thunder clouds. Watch for failures in communication, TV, cell phones, and watch for hurricanes, land, storms, etc. to develop out of nowhere. And so download and save articles, etc. that you see. Spaceweather.com, and that's one I'll be pointing to here. Because they will not make any relevant predictions. Okay, so anyway, that's pretty much what it says. Now to talk about the reality of what happens. First of all, let me talk about why comets are green. Well, what's going on? There are a number of molecular species that fluoresce green when you put them in an electric current. Now, understand that outer space is filled with very rarefied gases. And literally, this is not a plasma. A plasma is charged gases and electrons, where you have free electrons and ions. That is a plasma. Rarefied gas is neutral gas in outer space, and that is not a plasma. So not everything in outer space is plasma. Plasma is a fairly energetic form of gaseous, rarefied gas, but it's electrically charged in that the electrons are freely moving and they can recombine with the ions, etc. Some of the ions are negative, meaning they have an extra electron on them. Some atoms are susceptible to that. And so it's a fairly complex thing to understand what plasmas do. And so when I talk about the plasma discharge comet model, we're dealing with ionized things, including dust particles and even small grains of dust, some of them not so small. In fact, the comet, because of its inherent magnetic field and the electric field, has what is known in my theoretical work as the induced electric dipole force, which is in things with metal in them, like especially little asteroids or little dust particles with metal in them. The electrons in that electric field, which is non-uniform, the electrons are pulled to the positive side of the external field, and that leaves the other side positively charged of the dust particle. And so what you get is a small differential force in outer space that can be significant. It actually can be quite a bit larger than gravitational forces. So that's how comets attract in this meteor stream. That's why meteors have a lot of metal in them, because the comets tend to attract the stuff with metal. It's a big metal attraction vacuum machine, basically. It's a good edit, but these are all electrical forces at work. So why are comets green? Oxygen, carbon, there's lines that are in nitrogen, there's green lines in almost all of the molecular and atomic species that we see out there. And so what happens is that, in fact, these are fluorescing at a lot of other colors that you don't really see with your eyes. There's ultraviolet, there's infrared, but your eyes are not susceptible to that. So we tend to see the green, just like, for example, with a plant. A plant is green because that's the dominant color that's reflected off of plants. why are plants reflecting? A lot of people have the misnomer that plants need the green light to live. Well, no, the green is the most intense part of the visible spectrum. And if the plants absorbed all of that, they wouldn't be able to withstand it. They would dry up. They would wither and die. So they have to reflect, literally reflect all of that green color so that they don't wither up and die. I mean, they would get overheated. So that's why plants are green. It's a good color to get rid of heat. And so anyway, if you want something that attracts heat, plants are not black, because if they were black, they would absorb all that heat and then wither up and die. So that's why plants are green. They're literally reflecting the green light. They're not absorbing it. And so, at any rate, I read in some books where green is needed for photosynthesis. Well, yeah, all of the light is needed for photosynthesis, but the majority of the green light is reflected from the plant, not absorbed. Anyway, that's the same situation with comets a little bit, in that how does this green color form? The standard explanations that you read about in, like, spaceweather.com and the silly science that you see coming out of NASA is that it just happens in the vacuum of outer space. It just magically happens. It's kind of like magnetic ropes. Hey, magnetic rope sounds good to me. If you're a non-scientist, if you're an idiot, you might buy that, but not a trained scientist. There is no such thing as a magnetic rope. There's no such thing as atoms simply giving off light because they're in vacuum. It's just, well, more silly science from NASA. But the real reason, and you can do this in an experiment, take a rarefied gas in a tube, and you can get these in any laboratory, in chemistry or in physics laboratories. You have a glass, sealed glass tube with little wire coming out of both ends of it. And you can put this into a electric voltage device that puts a voltage across that glass tube, and in the tube is some rarefied gas. And just by itself, the gas doesn't fluoresce, doesn't do anything. If you take a really, really bright light source, like a sodium arc lamp or something like that, which is a tremendous amount of light coming off of that, and you put it in a laboratory and you shine that light through this tube filled with rarefied gas, guess what, boys and girls? Nothing happens. You don't get tremendous lighting. You don't get green light. You know what? You don't get anything, because that light is just passing right through, because it's rarefied gas. And the light that does fall on these molecules is not enough to be seen. If you want that baby to light up like a light bulb and become visible, you pass an electric current through it. And that baby will light up bright green or whatever, like neon has its own specific color, or sodium gas or carbon or whatever. So that's what's going on in the comet. The comet is literally lighting up like a light bulb because of electrical currents that are passing through it all the time. That's what the comet is. It's the discharge of the solar capacitor. So when the current is passing through that region of outer space, you have the exact same situation as you have in the laboratory in that tube with a rarefied gas. So that's why comets are green. Not because gas just is happy and it likes to give off light in the gas in a vacuum. Woo! Silly science from standard science. Like I say, these guys, I'm sure if you look back, and even the news reporters, they're even worse. They probably never even took a physics course in their reporting on science. I get a kick out of these science reporters today, a lot of young ones. And they got their big smiley picture there, total airheads reporting science. They have no idea what's going on. They just repeat what NASA tells them. They put it in print, and everybody's happy. So anyway, comets are green because of the electrical current passing through the comet, the plasma discharge comet model. Now, talk about the effects. The first and foremost one was the air glow. Now, this is something I personally saw myself. There's a photo, which you know, a photo's worth 1,000 words or 1,000,000 words in this case, right at the top of my webpage. So go there and take a look at it. I'll leave it up for a few more days, jmccsci.com. And while you're there, buy some water filter products, buy my books or something like that. Oh, and I did want to mention this. More and more people are buying a package. If you're new to this show and you don't have water filtration and you want to get my books and learn about what, you know, my science is all about, there's a package there. And it's called the Complete Survival Water Filtration and Book CD DVD Library Package. It's $899, which seems like a lot. But you get the full-size gravity stainless steel water filter. You get a 10-pack of the GF filters. And by the way, that filter itself comes with 4 filter elements. You probably only use one at a time. So this package comes with that, the stainless steel, the big stainless steel water filter. It comes with 4 filter elements, my GF filter elements to take out everything. A 10-pack of the GF filter elements, the pre-filter accessory set, which gives you additional powders and the paper filters that are necessary, the reusable things from the pre-filter, the 2-liter travel water filter, plus all of my books, CDs, and DVDs, everything in my library of books, CDs, DVDs. That's for $899. And if you look at it, just the stainless steel water filter in the 10-pack are going to cost $600. So for a few hundred more, you get the pre-filter accessory set, the 2-liter travel water filter, which comes with 2 filter elements, the little 5-inch ones, which are the same GF technology, plus all my books, e-books, CDs, and DVDs. Anyway, that's enough of that. It's right at the third thing on the sales page. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because a lot of people are buying that lately because a lot of new people are coming to my page. It gives you the complete water filter package that you need, you know, for 10 years, plus all the books, CDs, DVDs. Okay, enough of that. So the air glow picture is very important. I mean, it just lit up the southern hemisphere like a light bulb, and it was green. Gee, isn't that interesting that the air glow color was the exact same color as the comet? I wonder why that would be. Also, severe weather we saw all over the southern hemisphere. The very strange weather patterns coming into the east side of Brazil, tremendous weather patterns coming through there that are just totally abnormal, only due to this comet activity. And then the auroras were going crazy. The auroras at the north and the south pole went nuts. And so, yeah, these effects, all just basically everything I predicted came true. There's another explanation also at the top of my webpage, but go to my webpage for more information. It's www.7letters. It's JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, JMCCSCI.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.